Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. It's going to be a short one today. I've only got one interview, and it's with the film director, Connor Allen, that's coming up on Endeavors. Well, hello, and thanks for coming back. It has definitely been an up and down week. I finally got to go to the beach, or one of the beaches on Cole, Torreston, which was lovely. Got to brave the waters and go in for a dip. So that was nice. My coworker's like, I'm not letting you leave Cull without going to the beach. So we did that. And I've, you know, made friends with people that I've been hanging out at the pub and probably hanging out there a little too much. The one thing I've noticed, and I shouldn't be surprised about this, is I think when, or at least for me, when I'm living remotely and in almost quasi-isolation, is that your vices get amplified. And it's not that they didn't exist before, because that's why they're vices, but it feels like you can maybe self-reflect a little bit better. And because of that, I talked with management today, because, you know, everyone's been having some issues, and I'm going to be not, instead of doing the full 2 month contract, I'm gonna be leaving probably about just over a week, I would imagine. And you know what, it's okay. It's, you know, I would have liked to stay for the full 2 months and, you know, just enjoy the island. And also the money would have been nice, but I'm able to pay for school, and, you know, I got a really big, bunch of paperwork, for lack of a better term, that I have to complete, prior to school starting, which is in 4 weeks. And I just feel like I didn't know that was coming necessarily, and just the nature of that, I think requires my full attention, you know. Sometimes in life, as the Brits would say, you gotta take a punt. And sometimes stuff works, and sometimes stuff doesn't, you know? I got to see the island, you know? Job was really nice. I mean, you know, I never thought I'd be back in the kitchen. And now I know why. But I'm a bit too chaotic for this lifestyle, I think, at least right now. I'm working on slowing things down and turning things off a little, but when you only have, 4, 6, 8 weeks to make those changes, I think it becomes more difficult to do in that short period of time. So my time in call is almost over, which is a bit ironic because I just started writing about it. But anyway, I feel good. Like, it was a bit of a, gnarly, first half of the day, but I feel good, and that's really all I can feel. So, anyway, speaking of feel good, films always make me feel good. That's why I keep doing this podcast to, get to talk to all these film people. And one filmmaker who has a film coming up is a man by the name of Connor Allen. He is a writer-director who recently made the horror film, my kind of film, called In the Fire. And it's about a doctor who goes to a remote plantation to care for a disturbed boy who has inexplicable abilities. She ignites a war of science versus religion with the local priest who believes the boy is possessed by the devil. Religious horror has had a bit of a renaissance, if you will, in the last couple of years. You had The Nun, even the con, there's a lot of that Ari Aster film. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. So I really like a good horror film, and this one is no different. It's got a great international cast, among others, and Amber Heard, is the lead, and it actually comes out as I'm recording this, October 13th. So this is my conversation with Connor Allen about In the Fire.
Connor Allen, hello, how are you today?
Hi, Dan. I'm doing just great. It's always an exciting and nerve-wracking experience to have worked on a movie for, the better part of a decade and then actually be subjected to, feedback on, the audience reaction. So I'm excited and nervous.
And it must be interesting because it strikes me that directors maybe don't get to talk about their films in the same way or with as much frequency as actors do, at least outside of sort of like a festival experience, if you will. What are you sort of learning about that side of the business?
Well, I mean, there's a reason why, directors hide behind the camera and in my case also writers, hide in a dark room in front of their computer screen, is that we I think we prefer the shadows. And there's a reason why actors are actors and movie stars are movie stars, which is like they they know how to be in front of camera and do that. And not that I mind talking or telling, you know, the story of the film and stuff, but you know, generally the mouthpiece of the movie, the face of the movie is the movie stars.
I think this is this film is, you know, is a really interesting take on a lot of kind of different horror tropes or you know or different sort of horror ideas that we see. You know, it's a time period piece. We see science versus religion. We see a possessed child. Why do those specific elements for you make a good story?
So yeah, I mean, for me, I would much rather try to create some unique space and have a movie, a world, a story that's like a little interesting, you know, a little different, a little more interesting, hopefully, than stuff that people have seen before. So, you know, I like taking subgenres and mixing them and finding a new atmosphere, finding a new world, new time period, whatever it may be. In the case of this movie, you know, I was certainly greatly inspired by the classic movies of demonic possession, you know, the Omen, The Exorcist. But for us to, I don't want to retell those movies, I want to do something different. So, you know, realistically in history, mental illness was often misdiagnosed for demonic possession, which led to deaths and murders of many people and burned at the stake and pushed off cliffs and things. And so I thought, you know, what an interesting, different take on that subject matter to do a period film that's talking about psychology, that's talking about science and religion, and have a disturbed young boy at the center of it who maybe is possessed by the devil, like the local zealot priest is saying, or maybe just has some sort of mental illness in a time when psychology was only just starting to be studied. Should we be, you know, exercising? Should we do an exorcism on this kid, or should we protect him? That's the fundamental question in the movie.
Well, I like what you said in your statement about how in the world we live in absolutes, and that In the Fire operates in a gray area. And yeah, you know, and it strikes me, like reading the news sites and reading a lot of rhetoric, that it feels like we're losing our nuance a little bit. How do you think that maybe film can help us get back there and talk more about the issues rather than just kind of yelling at each other?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, human storytelling, human relationships, human connection is like so nuanced. You know, everything we do, our failures and our successes. And I do think the world's very tribal right now. You're either part of my tribe and I'm with you, or you're not, or you disagree with me and thus you're in the other tribe. And not only do I disagree with you, I hate you. You're wrong. Everything about you is wrong and everything about me is right. And my group, and we speak in absolutes. And that's not really the way the world is. You know, we think one thing until we learn something different, and people substitute facts for belief. Those are two different things. You can believe something, whether it's based on fact or not. And this film definitely dives into that, sort of those themes, and tries to discuss them. And I think movies, film is a way for us to bridge that gap and maybe, you know, walk a mile in someone else's shoes, or imagine, it's an imagination game, you know, what would it be like if, and then see what happens.
You mentioned that how, you know, that maybe science or religion doesn't have all the answers, and, you know, maybe we need a little bit of both in our lives. But how do you go about sort of blending this idea? It's like, okay, we have the facts. This is what the facts are. But how can also what we believe maybe enhance or...
Yeah, they're both equally situation. Both are equally prevalent. You know, facts change. Like, one thing that was really cool about making this movie is this movie happens in the 1890s, which is right when psychology was in its infancy. So the science of the movie, when we were researching it for the characters and kind of the way that treatment happens, we only studied the psychology and the treatments that were available at that time. Hypnosis, for example, was cutting edge science at that time. Maybe we look back on it now and say, well, maybe those facts weren't like that great, but and it's the same with the religion aspect. Faith can be a powerful tool for good, or it can be a powerful tool for bad. It can be right or wrong, depending on the very human person wielding it. And we look at that in the movie, and try to be balanced in the interpretation of both.
And you mentioned mental illness off the talk, and the last few years have seen a greater discussion, dialogue, awareness of mental illness and trauma. And I know in your research, you sort of only look at what was available at the time, but sort of through a modern lens, do you sort of look at the period when we that it was set and be like, oh yeah, how does trauma affect our lives even back then?
Yeah, I mean, definitely trauma is affecting us. I mean, what they used to call it back then, whatever, our mental illness diagnoses are now, was often grouped in this thing called hysteria. Oh, she's a hysteric. They have hysteria, and that was a catch-all phrase for crazy, basically.
Right.
And there really were, cases of demonic possession, which people that were called, mass hysteria, and they were blamed witches, and a group of Italian women were all slaughtered in the 1870s. And I'd say religion dropped the ball on that one. And I think if we'd have had to redo it now, it'd be a little bit different. But we're obviously, as you said, we're still grappling with that issue in a big way.
You mentioned off the top that, did I hear you right, that this took you sort of 10 years to make from sort of origin
Almost.
to start to finish. I mean, first of all, it must be just a relief to have it out, but what is it like sticking with a story for that long, and how much did it change over time?
It certainly does change over time, different iterations of the scripts, improvements and changes, and making it work for look different locations and things like that. But the fundamentals of the story pretty much stayed the same. Some scenes come in and out, but even from its very first draft that I wrote in like 2013, 2014, was this fundamental same story of a kind of exiled, ostracized little boy who's different from everyone else in this remote valley in South America that he lives in, and he's being blamed, because he's so different, he's being blamed for everything that goes wrong in this place. And a lot of things have gone wrong here. And about a female doctor of psychology known as an alienist at that time, who comes in to try to help him. And she's sort of an exile of, in her own right as a female doctor in a time when there were no female doctors, studying a profession that wasn't respected at the time. And these two people form a bond.
Casting and casting the right actor is always tough, especially when it comes to children, and especially when it comes to demonic children. I mean, the search for Linda Blair in The Exorcist is the stuff of legend. What was the process like for you in finding Lorenzo was his name?
Yes, so this just marvelously talented little kid named Lorenzo. A producer who was on the movie had worked with Lorenzo on a previous movie, a Christmas movie, total wildly different, happy genre. But when we started work on In the Fire together, he said, oh, you've got to look at Lorenzo, this young boy, super talented. Check him out. And I said, oh, absolutely, I'd love to. But we're gonna need to audition like 1,000 kids for this. And we did. We auditioned jillions of kids, and Lorenzo just blew them away. He was playing chess and they were playing checkers. And the character of Martine is this savant who's sort of emotionally detached and has sort of physical and psychological problems. And Lorenzo himself, although he's a happy, charming, you know, normal boy, he is kind of a savant himself. I mean, he's certainly brilliant. He's 11 years old, speaks three languages fluently, learned Spanish and Latin for his scenes that required those languages, and was excellent in them. And also did the movie wearing these special contact lenses that made his pupils a different size, which is a real, you know, a biological thing that can happen. And that makes you almost blind, like near blind. So he doing the whole movie nearly blind and doing an exceptional job of it.
How do you go about directing somebody like that? Because especially in this type of film, it's so grand, but it can also be so specific at the same time when it comes to, you know, possession or movements or emotions.
Yeah. Well, we had a set of rules. I mean, first of all, casting. Just if you cast a great actor, you can expect a really good performance. But then it's working with them. I mean, the movie really rests on, there's lots of interesting stuff and set pieces and supernatural stuff that may or may not happen in the movie. But if the relationship between Amber Heard's character of Grace and this disturbed little boy of Martine, if that foundation doesn't work, then the movie, I've wasted my decade of time. And so we did a lot of work in rehearsals and preparation to get these two people to have that relationship and to see it start in one place when we meet them and blossom into something very different by the end of the movie. And we kind of set some rules for ourselves, like eye contact. You know, Martine is this boy who's sort of emotionally unconnected with the rest of the world, so he doesn't make eye contact with other people. He won't look you in the eyes. But if he chooses to make eye contact, he is learning more in 1 second of one glimpse than most people would gather, you know, in 20 minutes. And so we would time eye contact to be moments when he's gaining something from the interaction. You know, and certainly any emotions for him were always sort of kept in check throughout the movie. You know, this is not a kid who hugs and smiles, and he's cerebral. He keeps them to himself.
Do you, as a filmmaker, learn anything about the art from working with young performers?
Yeah. You know, kids are, I think working with kids is probably very hit or miss. But when you hit, you have, you know, I remember being a kid and my imagination at that time. I have kids now myself. I have three kids, and they're young. They're all under eight, and they're all so imaginative. And when they play, they're so invested, so deeply, beautifully invested in whatever imaginative play they're doing. And that's kind of what we're all, as adults, that's my profession, pretending to do. And that's their life. And so when a kid is in that imaginative zone, they're kind of like freer than we are. You know, if you do it before like middle school, when we all learn to be ashamed of our imaginations and our eccentricities, they're willing to embrace those and just be all in. And that's why sometimes, you know, a kid can be like the most natural, best actor of all.
Speaking of learning things, is this true that you sort of learned and got your filmmaking career started in Indonesia? And I was just wondering what that experience was like.
Yeah, I lived in Jakarta for almost 4 years, worked on my first films in the Indonesian language. There was a series of war films set in the 1940s about Indonesia's war of independence from the Dutch. And, you know, great life experience. I mean, I've always been interested in the world, and to live in a faraway place that's kind of a blank slate for most Americans was a great experience for me and in my life. And it's a, you know, it's a Muslim country, and it's the world's largest Muslim population, so it's just makes me appreciate the world in a different way.
And I know you have another film currently in pre-production. Just wondering if you could tell us anything about Spartan.
Well, I can't tell you very much other than that I'm very excited about it as my next project, and some people are involved with it who I've worked with before.
Do you, as a director, is it easier to work with people that you've worked with before because you already have that
They're
rapport?
good. I think as you work with people, you got this sort of mental tally in your head of like, oh, yep, you're great. All right, you're on my list. We're gonna work together again, whether you want to or not. And then you have other people who you do something with, and you're like, nah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then finally, when filming in the fire, was there a favorite scene or moment that occurred during filming that just really stuck out with you or you really enjoyed?
Yes, there is a scene in the movie where some hypnosis is happening. As I mentioned earlier, that really was a really cutting-edge medical treatment for psychology at the time. And so Amber Heard's character is using hypnosis with a metronome to try to elicit some responses from this little boy. And during the scene, the boy, who's quite gifted in his own intellectual prowess, he's sort of able to turn the hypnosis against her, and she finds herself that she's hypnotized and starts confessing some great hidden fears of her own to the boy. And it's a really powerful scene on the page, one that we rehearsed, and I just love how it worked out. It's really intense, a lot of tension. It's like sort of supernatural, and we're not sure, is he just really smart and was able to turn the tables on her, or does he indeed have some sort of supernatural powers that science can't explain, and now he's controlling her. And we're kind of in that space of like, okay, is this kid like is this Damien from The Omen, or is he just really smart and he's doing what the doctor's doing, even though he's a kid?
Well, the film is In the Fire and it comes out on October the 13th.
Now, Friday, October the 13th.
Friday
Never
the 13th. How apt for a
heard
horror film, right?
Yeah, pop some popcorn and turn the lights down.
There you go. Connor Allen, thanks so much for your time today.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks, Dan.
Alrighty, cheers.
Once again, that was my conversation with filmmaker Connor Allen. His new film, Into the Fire, opens today, October 13th. Well, I imagine the next time I'll be coming to you, I will be in either the Northeast or Lyon, depends if I decide to get away for a couple of days. I will point out I will probably be on hiatus end of November and most of December just because of my course, and I will not have time to do anything but the course. I may go on hiatus earlier. We'll see. It's been an up and down couple of years for this show. Like my life, but I will continue to do it. So, I guess I will see you all when I see you. Make sure to go check out In the Fire. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. Bye. For now.